Chapter 55. State of greater consternation than when he heard these words. He, Fladek, Fladek in full militia uniform, Fladek the general, Fladek, the caressed of foreign noblemen, expected to know a fellow who had come over in the steerage of line of packet ship, at the cost of £4.10. And meeting that fellow in the very sanctuary of New York fashion, and nestling in the bosom of the New York aristocracy. He almost laid his hand upon his sword. A death-like stillness fell upon the Norrises. If this story should get wind, their country relation had, by his imprudence, forever disgraced them. They were the bright particular stars of an exalted New York sphere. There were other fashionable spheres above them, and other fashionable spheres below, and none of the stars in any one of these spheres had anything to say to the stars in any other of these spheres. But, through all the spheres it would go forth that the Norrises, deceived by gentlemanly manners and appearances, had, falling from their high estate, received a dollarless and unknown man. O guardian eagle of the pure republic, had they lived for this? You will allow me, apostrophe said Martin, after a terrible silence, to take my leave. I feel that I am the cause of at least as much embarrassment here, as I have brought upon myself. But I am bound, before I go, to exonerate this gentleman, who, in introducing me to such society, was quite ignorant of my unworthiness, I assure you. Apostrophe, with that he made his bow to the Norrises, and walked out like a man of snow, very cool externally, but pretty hot within. Come, come, apostrophe said Mr. Norris the father, looking with a pale face on the assembled circle as Martin closed the door. The young man has this night beheld a refinement of social manner, and an easy magnificence of social decoration, to which he is a stranger in his own country. Let us hope it may awake a moral sense within him. Apostrophe, if that peculiarly transatlantic article, a moral sense for, if native statesmen, orators, and pamphleteers, are to be believed, America quite monopolizes the commodity, if that peculiarly transatlantic article be supposed to include a benevolent love of all mankind, certainly Martin's would have borne, just then, a deal of waking. As he strode along the street, with Mark at his heels, his immoral sense was in active operation, prompting him to the utterance of some rather sanguinary remarks, which it was well for his own credit that nobody overheard. He had so far cooled down, however, that he had begun to laugh at the recollection of these incidents, when he heard another step behind him, and turning round encountered his friend Bevan, quite out of breath. He drew his arm through Martin's, and entreating him to walk slowly, was silent for some minutes. At length he said, I hope you exonerate me in another sense? Apostrophe apostrophe, how do you mean? Apostrophe apostrophe asked Martin. I hope you acquit me of intending, or foreseeing the termination of our visit. But I scarcely need ask you that. Apostrophe, scarcely indeed, apostrophe said Martin. I am the more beholden to you for your kindness, when I find what kind of stuff the good citizens here are made of. Apostrophe, I reckon, apostrophe his friend returned, that they are made of pretty much the same stuff as other folks, if they would but own it, and not set up on false pretenses. Apostrophe, in good faith, that's true, apostrophe said Martin. I dare say, apostrophe resumed his friend, you might have such a scene as that in an English comedy, and not detect any gross improbability or anomaly in the matter of it. Apostrophe apostrophe, yes, indeed. Apostrophe apostrophe, doubtless it is more ridiculous here than anywhere else, apostrophe said his companion, but our professions are to blame for that. So far as I myself am concerned, I may add, that I was perfectly aware from the first, that you came over in the steerage, for I had seen the list of passengers, and knew it did not comprise your name. Apostrophe, I feel more obliged to you than before, apostrophe said Martin. Norris is a very good fellow in his way, apostrophe observed Mr. Bevan. Is he? Apostrophe apostrophe said Martin dryly. Oh yes. There are 100 good points about him. If he or anybody else addressed him as another order of being, and sued to him in form of papyrus, he would be all kindness and consideration. Apostrophe, I need, have traveled 3,000 miles from home, to find such a character as that, apostrophe said Martin. Neither he nor his friend said anything more on the way back, each appearing to find sufficient occupation in his own thoughts. The tea, or the supper, or whatever else they called the evening meal, was over when they reached the major's, but the cloth, ornamented with a few additional smears and stains, was still upon the table. At one end of the board Mrs. Jefferson Brick and two other ladies were drinking tea, out of the ordinary course, evidently, for they were bonneted and shawled, and seemed to have just come home. By the light of three flaring candles of different lengths, in as many candlesticks of different patterns, the room showed to almost as little advantage as in broad day. These ladies were all three talking together in a very loud tone, when Martin and his friend entered, but seeing those gentlemen, they stopped directly, and became excessively genteel, not to say frosty. As they went on to exchange some few remarks in whispers, the very water in the teapot might have fallen 20 degrees in temperature beneath their chilling coldness. Have you been to meeting, Mrs. Brick? Apostrophe apostrophe asked Martin's friend, with something of a roguish twinkle in his eye. To lecture, sir. Apostrophe, I beg your pardon. I forgot. You don't go to meeting, I think. Apostrophe, here the lady on the right of Mrs. Brick, gave a pious cough as much as to say I do. Apostrophe, apostrophe, as, indeed, she did nearly every night in the week. A good discourse, ma'am? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Mr. Bevan, addressing this lady. The lady raised her eyes in a pious manner, and answered yes. Apostrophe, she had been much comforted by some good, strong, peppery doctrine, which satisfactorily disposed of all her friends and acquaintances, and quite settled their business. Her bonnet too, had far outshone every bonnet in the congregation, so she was tranquil on all accounts. What course of lectures are you attending now, ma'am? Apostrophe apostrophe said Martin's friend, turning again to Mrs. Brick. The philosophy of the soul, on Wednesdays. Apostrophe, on Mondays? Apostrophe apostrophe, the philosophy of crime. Apostrophe, on Fridays? Apostrophe apostrophe, the philosophy of vegetables. Apostrophe, you have forgotten Thursdays, the philosophy of government, my dear, apostrophe observed the third lady. No, apostrophe said Mrs. Brick. That's Tuesdays. Apostrophe, so it is. Apostrophe apostrophe, cried the lady. The philosophy of matter on Thursdays, of course. Apostrophe, you see, Mr. Chuzzlewit, our ladies are fully employed, apostrophe said Bevan. Indeed you have reason to say so, apostrophe answered Martin. Between these very grave pursuits abroad, and family duties at home, their time must be pretty well engrossed. Apostrophe, Martin stopped here, for he saw that the ladies regarded him with no very great favor, though what he had done to deserve the disdainful expression which appeared in their faces he was at a loss to divine. But on their going upstairs to their bedrooms, which they very soon did, Mr. Bevan informed him that domestic drudgery was far beneath the exalted range of these philosophers, and that the chances were 100 to 1, that not one of the three could perform the easiest woman's work for herself, or make the simplest article of dress for any of her children. Though whether they might not be better employed with such blunt instruments as knitting needles than with these edge tools, apostrophe he said, is another question, but I can answer for one thing, they don't often cut themselves. Devotions and lectures are our balls and concerts. They go to these places of resort as an escape from monotony, look at each other's clothes, and come home again. Apostrophe, when you say home, do you mean a house like this? Apostrophe, apostrophe, very often. But I see you are tired to death, and will wish you good night. We will discuss your projects in the morning. You cannot but feel already that it is useless staying here with any hope of advancing them. You will have to go further. Apostrophe unto fare worse. ' said Martin, pursuing the old adage. Well, I hope not. But sufficient for the day, you know, good night. They shook hands heartily and separated. As soon as Martin was left alone, the excitement of novelty and change which had sustained him through all the fatigues of the day departed, and he felt so thoroughly dejected and worn out that he even lacked the energy to crawl upstairs to bed. In 12 or 15 hours, how great a change had fallen on his hopes and sanguine plans! New and strange as he was to the ground on which he stood, and to the air he breathed, he could not recall in all that he had crowded into that one day, but entertain a strong misgiving that his enterprise was doomed. Rash and ill-considered as it had often looked on shipboard, but had never seemed on shore, it wore a dismal aspect now that frightened him. Whatever thoughts he called up to his aid, they came upon him in depressing and discouraging shapes, and gave him no relief. Even the diamonds on his finger sparkled with the brightness of tears, and had no ray of hope in all their brilliant luster. He continued to sit in gloomy rumination by the stove, unmindful of the boarders who dropped in one by one from their stores and counting houses, or the neighboring bar rooms, and, after taking long pulls from a great white water jug upon the sideboard, and lingering with a kind of hideous fascination near the brass spittoons, lounged heavily to bed, until at length Mark Tapley came and shook him by the arm, supposing him asleep. Mark! ' he cried, starting. All right, sir, said that cheerful follower, snuffing with his fingers the candle he bore. It ain't a very large bed, yarn, sir, and a man as wasn't thirsty might drink, afore breakfast, all the water you've got to wash in, and afterwards eat the towel. But he will sleep without rocking tonight, sir. I feel as if the house were on the sea, said Martin, staggering when he rose, and a mutterly wretched. I'm as jolly as a sandboy, myself, sir, said Mark. But, Lord, I have reason to be. I ought to have been born here, that's my opinion. Take care how you go, for they were now ascending the stairs. You recollect the gentleman aboard the screw as had the very small trunk, sir? The valise? Yes. Well, sir, there's been a delivery of clean clothes from the wash tonight, and they're put outside the bedroom doors here. If you take notice as we go up, what a very few shirts there are, and what a many fronts, you'll penetrate the mystery of his packing. But Martin was too weary and despondent to take heed of anything, so had no interest in this discovery. Mr. Tapley, nothing dashed by his indifference, conducted him to the top of the house, and into the bedchamber prepared for his reception, which was a very little narrow room, with half a window in it, a bedstead like a chest without a lid, two chairs, a piece of carpet, such as shoes are commonly tried upon at a ready-made establishment in England, a little looking glass nailed against the wall, and a washing table, with a jug and ewer, that might have been mistaken for a milk pot and slop basin. I suppose they polish themselves with a dry cloth in this country, said Mark. They've certainly got a touch of the phoby, sir. I wish you would pull off my boots for me, said Martin, dropping into one of the chairs. I am quite knocked up dead beat, Mark. You won't say that tomorrow morning, sir, returned Mr. Tapley, nor even tonight, sir, when you've made a trial of this. With which he produced a very large tumbler, piled up to the brim with little blocks of clear transparent ice, through which one or two thin slices of lemon, and a golden liquid of delicious appearance, appealed from the still depths below, to the loving eye of the spectator. What do you call this? Said Martin. But Mr. Tapley made no answer, merely plunging a reed into the mixture, which caused a pleasant commotion among the pieces of ice, and signifying by an expressive gesture that it was to be pumped up through that agency by the enraptured drinker. Martin took the glass with an astonished look, applied his lips to the reed, and cast up his eyes once in ecstasy. He paused no more until the goblet was drained to the last drop. "There, sir," said Mark, taking it from him with a triumphant face. "If ever you should happen to be dead beat again, when I ain't in the way, all you've got to do is to ask the nearest man to go and fetch a cobbler." "To go and fetch a cobbler?" repeated Martin. "This wonderful invention, sir," said Mark, tenderly patting the empty glass, "is called a cobbler. Sherry cobbler when you name it long, cobbler when you name it short. Now you're equal to having your boots took off, and are, in every particular worth mentioning, another man." Having delivered himself of this solemn preface, he brought the bootjack. "Mind, I am not going to relapse, Mark," said Martin. "But, good heaven, if we should be left in some wild part of this country without goods or money." "Well, sir," replied the imperturbable Tapley, "from what we've seen already, I don't know whether, under those circumstances, we shouldn't do better in the wild parts than in the tame ones." Tom Pinch. Said Martin, in a thoughtful tone, "what would I give to be again beside you, and able to hear your voice, though it were even in the old bedroom at Pecksniff's?" Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.